So we're switching up the order on you a little bit. The remaining three presenters are all from the Primary Care Information Project of the New York City Department of Health. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about an EHR data system that I run and how we use that to inform policy and programs. And my colleagues are going to give you some specific research examples of how we use that same data. I have nothing to disclose. I'm going to start by telling you about who we are, how we're structured a little bit, the system that we use to extract electronic health record data for the City of New York, and then run through some examples of how we use that for policy and programming at the City Health Department. So we are a bureau of the New York City Health Department, founded in 2005, so we're hitting 10 years, and we've been around since the early days of EHR adoption. We have acted as a regional extension center for New York City, helping 20,000 providers with their attempt to reach meaningful use, and given a lot of providers subsidized software and QI support. Our goal is very much what I think the goal of the HIT section here at APHA is, which is to take data, lots and lots of data, turn it into meaningful information that we can use to drive action in public health and really affect the health of populations. So everyone's probably seen this or a similar slide, but I feel like it really bears repeating that this is a brand new field. 10 years ago, using EHR data to inform policies, to inform programs, was not on the table. We just didn't have the penetration, the coverage that we do. And now we're pushing 80%, and that's really an impressive turnaround over the last 10 years. So let me tell you about how our system works. We are connected to the practices of a particular EHR vendor, eClinicalWorks, and we're able to push queries to each practice on a nightly basis and receive aggregate patient counts back. So it's a secured connection. The SQL queries go to the practices and then come back into our internal database. One of the salient features of this system is that we do not receive any patient-level data. We only receive aggregate data. And that's something that gives providers and patients a lot of confidence in this system because we're not actually getting their personal data. We're currently connected to over 750 practices. That includes community health centers, independent practices, and a couple of hospital outpatient departments. We had about 2 million patients making 7 million visits in 2013 and 2014. 6 million patients coming through since the start of the system. And we really have kind of breadth and depth of coverage of the city as well. We have at least 9% of patients in each of the health department designated neighborhoods coming through the doors of one of our practices in a given year. In terms of who comes to these practices, who we represent well, relative to the New York City, we are overrepresented among women of reproductive age, and you can see that here. On the left, we have the American Community Survey percentages, and on the right, we have the HUB numbers. So you can see that there's this concave where the young men should be. No surprise, we know they don't seek care at quite the same rates. We're represented in terms of Medicare and Medicaid recipients, non-white, race, and ethnicity, as well as frequent care seekers, often those with chronic disease. So of course this brings some bias into our data, but often those are the groups we really care about too. So let me run you through some policies and programs. And if you have specific ones you want to ask about, you can do that with me, certainly. We've gone from these paper charts that take a lot of work and effort to, and you know, human hours to get useful information out of, and now we can get actionable information almost overnight. And the way we've taken advantage of that at the New York City Health Department includes examples of evaluating citywide policy change. So New York State in 2010 implemented a law that everyone needed to be offered an HIV test every year when they came in for care. So we used our data to examine that, and we saw that HIV testing did indeed increase at a faster rate than it had been doing previously, and more so among the age groups affected by the law. We also saw extensive more improvement in the borough of the Bronx, where the health department had actually had a detailing campaign go on. So our friends in the HIV Bureau were very pleased to see that. We've done similar work with hepatitis C, looking at practice level testing for hepatitis C. So the recommendation that we were able to look at was for the cohort born 45 to 65, the boomers receiving the hepatitis C test. So if we looked at the proportion of baby boomers that had received a test, that had ever received a test, we saw a nice increase in that. However, when we looked at it in terms of annual testing of baby boomers by the practices, that stayed pretty flat. Another use of this system is after Hurricane Sandy, which occurred in 2010, we were able to compare our patient numbers to, it occurred in 2012. We were able to compare our patient numbers to the previous 2 years and see if our primary care practices were getting back online in these neighborhoods that had been flooded or affected by the storm, and see if they were returning in the same numbers as they had. And we were able to see that within just 2 weeks, most of our practices were up and running and seeing as many or more patients as they had the preceding years. Another thing that this EHR data allows is granular tracking of neighborhoods and of geographic subsets of the population. So this map is looking at the percent of the population that received a smoking cessation intervention when they came in for care in the last 2 years. So that was either counseling or pharmacologic therapy. And you can see that the range by neighborhood varied from 15% to 95%. And that's something that we can really intervene on meaningfully, because you know that's a process measure. Is the provider sitting down with the patient and you know giving them counseling, prescribing a medication that will help them quit. Another way we can look at subpopulations is by race, ethnicity, which we know is one of the factors driving disparities. We have here the proportion of hypertensive patients who had their last blood pressure in the controlled range, and you can see that that varies consistently by race. And then again, the smoking cessation measure that I talked about. And what's really cool here, Courtney made this point, usually this type of data lags by 18 months, 2 years, and it's often looking at 1 year of data before you can get the power to look at race ethnicity groups. But we can do it on a monthly basis, and we have tens of thousands of patients in each of these race and ethnicity groups, so we can draw some meaningful conclusions in a timely way. Another thing that we use this data for in terms of programming, and also in terms of keeping up our relationships with providers and keeping this system running and keeping people engaged, is we provide dashboards or report cards that help providers look at their patient panel, and they can see how they're doing relative to other PCIP providers, where they might have room to improve. And they can look at their patients from a more population perspective instead of treating the person in front of them, which is what doctors are trained to do. We've made some topic-specific dashboards. So this one is about hypertension control, and one of the metrics we were able to include here was the percent of patients who had a future appointment scheduled at the time that they left the office, because we felt that this was very important for continuity of care and hypertensive patients needing to be seen on a regular basis. We also had percent of a number of patients according to their hypertensive stage, and the number of those that had an appropriate antihypertensive medication prescribed. Then we use this on our end as well in terms of our surveillance of the city. So on a weekly basis, we were pulling in the numbers of hypertensive patients that our practices would see over the coming week, according to who had a visit scheduled, the percentage that were diabetic, the percentage that were marked as smokers, and then, so that's chart number one. Chart number two, we pulled out the practices that had the highest percentage of hypertension of hypertensive patients scheduled to come in the coming week, and so that we could target them if we wished to. Three was a reporting metric. Number four grouped the information by neighborhood, so we could see which of our neighborhoods in New York City, according to this week of data, had the highest percent of hypertensive, diabetic, and smoking patients. And then we could also map that out geographically and see, well, where should maybe our point of intervention be in this coming week or this coming month. So we used that type of information to support our prevention initiatives and quality improvement initiatives. So we worked particularly closely with about 100 practices in doing workflow redesign, sending them these hypertension dashboards, monitoring their data on a weekly and monthly basis to help them do EHR optimization, quality improvement, and also documentation that would help with their with generating revenue, getting correct billing. So to pull out a few of the best things about this data, as well as some of its weaknesses, I'd say that some of the great advantages are how timely this is. We can get data from as recent as yesterday. It's relatively affordable, at least compared to the cost of putting hundreds of people in the field to go do interviews or call providers or survey 100,000 patients. It's also great because providers really like to see their own data, and this is something that helps give them confidence in our systems. It helps them evaluate the way they're giving care. Providers want to give good care, and they find it very helpful to see the missed opportunities that they have had maybe over the last month or the last year. For our particular system, the strength of the aggregate data is that it really maintains patient confidentiality. There's not a threat there. And then we have an extremely large sample size, and what that allows is this granular focus on subpopulations, whether it's race, ethnicity, or certain age groups, or geographical breakdowns of the city. Some of the weaknesses of this data and trying to use it to impact policy and programs: we're covering the doctor-going population only, so that's not a problem if primary care information project, that's who you're focusing on, that's how you're trying to reach the populations through their primary care. But it can be a limitation. And the aggregate data, the disadvantage of that is that we can't deduplicate it. It leads to double counting if somebody presents at multiple practices. It also means we can't really track patients longitudinally. We can track practice trends longitudinally, but less so with patients. And then, of course, I'm talking about a system that is set up already, and that takes a lot of work, resources, human hours, collaboration with a vendor or a health department or 18 different parties in your geographic area. While we're waiting for the RIOs to really reach their full potential, it takes a lot of work to kind of fill in those gaps. Especially for smaller jurisdictions. We've been fortunate in New York City to have good funding and good partners. So I'd like to thank my colleagues at PCIP and also the eClinicalWorks team that helped provide us with this system. My information is here. And